Phoenix Audio presents
The Cat Who Killed Lillian Jackson Braun, written by Robert Kaplow. The Cat Who Killed Lillian Jackson Braun is a work of fiction. Although it is set against a background of real persons and places, those persons and places have been reimagined in the storytelling. Robert Kaplow. She agrees sorrowfully and slowly goes reluctantly home to the husband. I lie down in the dark bedroom and masturbate violently. Clifford Odets, 1940 Journal. Chapter 1, Returning Platinum. Someone must have traduced James Q, for without having done anything wrong, he heard a pounding on the door of his house. The veteran children's book writer, with worldwide experience, pulled a robe over his 6'2", 50-ish, heavy-set, graying-haired, mournful-eyed, and luxuriantly mustached frame. As he arose, he heard the floor creak under the weight of his exposition. Still, he thought, if they haven't read the other books, I've got to go through all this again. He slept on the ground floor of a converted barn, which he had modified with the small fortune he had accrued from his series of successful children's books. Still, the knocking came. He nearly tripped over his Siamese cats, Ying Tong and Poon Tang, who were up, hungry and bristling with suspicion. Ying Tong was the amiable little female with a penchant for listening to old recordings of the Goon Show. Poon Tang, the male, uttered a piercing but ambiguous, "Yo!" He could make out two male voices beyond the door. "Mr. Kafka! Mr. James Kafka! Are you there?" He opened the door to see the two men, nearly identical in close-fitting black suits. "You've been traduced."
"Traduced?"
"Yes, sir, traduced." "Name?" asked one of the men. "James McIntosh Kafka." "Sir, you've been traduced." "Look," said Kafka, holding up a hand, "I've got to tell you, I'm not really 100% sure what traduced means."
"Traduced?"
"Yes." The men looked at each other. They looked at the piece of paper they held. One whispered something to the other. "We'll be right back," one said. "Yes, we'll be back." They quickly headed to the unmarked car, which stood parked in the driveway. One of them muttered, "I told you to fucking look it up." A copy of the New York Times and the Daily News lay in the blue and yellow plastic bags in the driveway. Kafka brought the papers in the house as the phone was ringing. He ignored the phone, letting the answering machine kick in, though its volume was too low to monitor. The Times headline read, "Admitting he fought in Taliban, American agrees to 20-year term." The Daily News headline read, "Johnny Jihad cops a plea." On the bottom of page one of the Times was a picture of a kindly-looking, white-haired woman wearing oversized glasses, her chin on her fist, a sly smile on her lips. The caption read, "Popular mystery novelist Lillian Jackson Braun dies under mysterious circumstances." Kafka looked for the same story in the news. Instead, there was only, "White glove, white hood. Michael Jackson to dance at white supremacy rally." Ying Tang and Poon Tang were yowling again. He prepared for them two bowls of Goan shrimp curry with steamed basmati rice. The shrimp had been stewed in ground coconut, red chili, ginger, garlic, and little turmeric. Then he meticulously added fried eggs, sunny side up, and two pieces of French bread. He placed the two steaming bowls down on the floor of his converted barn, careful to make sure Ying Tong's green Chinese ceramic bowl went on the left side and Poon Tang's carved wooden bowl of Congolese teak went on the right. "Enjoy yourself," said Kafka. The cats took one sniff and slinked away, irritated at not getting the dried-up stars of Delicat they so loved. Kafka, in the meantime, settled down to his customary Sanka and stale glazed donut as he continued to read the obituary. "Beloved writer found decapitated in gay bar," by R.W. Apple, Jr. "It might have been a scene from one of her own mystery stories. Beloved author of over 24 Cat Who novels, Lillian Jackson Braun's decapitated body was discovered sometime after 2 this morning in a toilet stall in a Greenwich Village bar. The appearance of headless body was reported by club owner Thomas Tom Katz, who was investigating why the restroom door had been locked for over 2 hours. Mr. Katz at first thought Miss Brown was throwing up in the toilet bowl as the body was on its knees with its head in the toilet. I shook her shoulder and I said, "Hey, fella, you all right?" Then her body fell over and I saw it had no head. I looked in the bowl under the sink. I couldn't find it, said Katz. The body was identified by patrons who had seen the elderly writer earlier at the bar with a younger male companion. Miss Brown, who had been hospitalized earlier this year for what Dr. Alan Greenspan referred to as infectious greed, was apparently recuperating rapidly and had been seen earlier that evening in tow with about a dozen male fans as they moved from bar to bar in the late-night world inhabited largely by the city's gay male population. It seemed an incongruous setting to find the body of the delicate authoress, known to her millions of fans worldwide for the genteel, Norman Rockwell-like world of her novels, a world populated by charming eccentrics with names such as Derek Cuddlebrink, Osmond Haselrich, Lena Inchpot, and Homer Tibbet, and a menagerie of cats called Punky, Bootsy, Snuffles, and Shushu. Miss Braun's editor at G.P. Putnam's told the Times he was shocked that her body had been discovered in such a location, and Miss Braun's second husband, Earl Bettinger, told reporters early this morning that he was astounded at the location of his wife's body, adding that she lived the quiet life she portrayed in her novels, caring for her cats, preparing gourmet meals, working on her novels, and often going to bed by 8:30. Eyewitnesses, however, described a different woman altogether. A figure dressed in silver and black, surrounded by a boisterous pack of male devotees, cruising the West Village through a series of leather bars and dance clubs, a world of loud music and easy access to drugs. Police have traced her final night's journey through a series of clubs, the Azure Spheres, the Wiener in the Shrub, the Smiling Altar Boy, the Stork's Club, El Lumpompadero, the Pastoral Pipe Cleaner, and finally, the Bulgin' Marbles on Barrow Street, where her body was discovered. Miss Braun began writing professionally when she was 16, penning for the Detroit Times a series of daily poems, or spoems, I called them. They were sports poems. Kafka found himself strangely moved by the obituary. He had actually known Lillian Jackson Braun. They'd met at various book fairs, writers' roundtables, the Edgars, Diamond Dagger Award dinners. He'd been in attendance as a semi-celebrated children's book author. His Little Blivet series, Little Blivet at the Zoo, Little Blivet Goes to Town, had been great successes in their time, and now that the generation who had grown up with them had children of their own, the books were rarely out of print. Kafka had tried to update the series in the late 1990s with more politically diversified and multicultural titles. Little Blivet Has Three Daddies, Little Blivet Goes to Harlem, Little Blivet Meets Tito Puente. But these were largely ignored by the critics and readers alike, going, as Kafka liked to quip, directly from the printer to the remainder tables. Returning platinum was the phrase he used to describe the second half of his career. But still, the royalty statements came in quarterly on Little Blivet at the Zoo and Little Blivet Goes to Town, and they more than supported him. Readers adored the old titles. They desperately wanted him to be the friendly old writer who appeared in the books, Mr. Flapjacks. And so he often dressed the part, a white Panama hat, long white coat, lavender scarf around his neck, and a walking stick. Sometimes he caught himself in the mirror and couldn't believe his own absurdity. At an NCTE conference in Pittsburgh, he was walking towards the convention center with Lillian Jackson Braun when they caught sight of themselves in the smoky glass of the corridor. She said, "You look like a cross between Colonel Sanders and the naked civil servant." "And you look like a geriatric Bull Dyke," he'd thought. But of course he'd said nothing. He smiled, twirled his cane merrily, tilted his hat, and sang, "Mas que nada." She would later use the incident in her novel, The Cat Who Loved Sergio Mendez and Brazil 66. The phone was ringing again, and this time he turned up the volume.
Mr. Kafka, this is Detective Ampersand from the Westfield Police Department. As you may know, the writer Lillian Jackson Braun was murdered last night, and her cell phone records indicate that the last call she made was to you at 11.09 p.m. Can you give me a call and... He looked at the answering machine. There were three calls in its memory, including this one.
He pressed the play stop button.
You have three messages, said the machine in its digitally synthesized female voice.
Message one.
Saturday, 11.02 p.m., 40 seconds.
And then, unmistakably, the voice of Lillian Jackson Braun, its flat Michigan consonants.
Braun here.
Her voice was close and a little breathless.
See what you can find out for me about the phrase lavender ink, and don't mention this to anyone.
Now there was a recording of a jazz combo playing time after time.
1 minute, she said to someone in the background, and she hung up.
End of message, said the robot voice.
The other two messages were both from the cops. He played Lillian's message again.
The phrase lavender ink.
Braun had frequently called him up in the past to do light research.
He at least was borderline computer literate,
and she was insufferably lazy about leaving the house.
A noise from the table, and Kafka turned to see Ying Tong scrabbling through the daily news. It was as if she were trying to communicate something to him. She yowled, got up on her haunches, and urinated on the paper.
Bad girl, he shouted.
He moved to pick up the soaked newspaper when he noticed the urine seemed to form an almost perfect circle around one particular story. It would not be the first time some seemingly preternatural power in the Siamese had given Kafka a vital clue to a mystery. The story, its inky newsprint smell mixing with the odoriferous cat urine, was headlined, Britney Spears Gets Breasts Stuck in Cement Outside Grauman's Chinese Theater. And there was a photo of poor Britney, bent low over the sidewalk, wincing in pain, towel over her back, emergency medical team chipping away. How was this connected with the mystery of Lillian Jackson Braun's death, he wondered. Kafka studied the photograph for a while longer, staring at the towel around Brittany's shoulders. Then he moved to the bedroom and masturbated violently.